Unit 10, Text A. The Campaign for Election. Although presidential elections occur every 4 years, many people feel that they do not have a true understanding of how presidential campaigns operate. The winner in the November general election is almost certain to be either the Republican or the Democratic nominee. A minor party or independent candidate such as George Wallace in 1968, John Anderson in 1980, or Ross Perot in 1992 and 1996, can draw votes away from the major party nominees, but stands almost no chance of defeating them. A major party nominee has the critical advantage of support from the party faithful. Earlier in the 20th century, this support was so firm and steady that the victory of the stronger party's candidate was almost a certainty. Warren G. Harding accepted the 1920 Republican nomination at his Ohio home, stayed there throughout most of the campaign, and won a full victory simply because most of the voters of his time were Republicans. Party loyalty has declined in recent decades, but more than two-thirds of the nation's voters still identify themselves as Democrats or Republicans, and most of them support their party's presidential candidate. Even Democrat George McGovern, who had the lowest level of party support among recent nominees, was backed in 1972 by nearly 60% of his party's voters. Presidential candidates act strategically in deciding whether to pursue a course of action. They try to estimate its likely impact on the voters. During the 1992 campaign, a sign on the wall of Clinton's headquarters in Little Rock read, "The economy, stupid." The slogan was the idea of James Carville, Clinton's chief strategist, and was meant as a reminder to the candidate and the staff to keep the campaign focused on the nation's slow-moving economy, which ultimately was the issue that defeated Bush. As in 1980, when Jimmy Carter lost to Ronald Reagan during tough economic times, the voters were motivated largely by a desire for change. Candidates try to project a strong leadership image. Whether voters accept this image, however, depends more on external factors than on a candidate's personal characteristics. In 1991, after the Gulf War, Bush's approval rating reached 91%. The highest level recorded since polling began in the 1930s. A year later, with the nation's economy in trouble, Bush's approval rating dropped below 40%. Bush tried to stir images of his strong leadership of the war, but voters remained concerned about the economy. The candidate's strategies are shaped by many considerations, including the constitutional provision that each state shall have electoral votes equal in number to its representation in Congress. Each state thus gets 2 electoral votes for its Senate representation, and a varying number of electoral votes depending on its House representation. Although there are 538 electoral votes, including 3 for the District of Columbia, even though it has no voting representatives in Congress, to win the presidency, a candidate must receive at least 270 votes, an electoral majority. Candidates are particularly concerned with winning the states which have the largest population, such as California with 54 electoral votes, New York 33, Texas 32, Florida 25, Pennsylvania 23, Illinois 22, and Ohio 21. Victory in the 11 largest states alone would provide an electoral majority, and presidential candidates therefore spend most of their time campaigning in those states. Clinton received only 43% of the popular vote in 1992, compared with Bush's 38% and Perot's 19%. But Clinton won in states that gave him an overwhelming 370 electoral votes, compared with 168 for Bush and none for Perot.
Text B. The American Two-Party System. No one now living in the United States can remember when the contest began between the Democratic and the Republican parties. It has been going on for more than a century, making it one of the oldest political rivalries in the world. The American political system is a classical example of the two-party system. When we say that we have a two-party system in the United States, we do not mean that we have only two parties. Usually about a dozen parties nominate presidential candidates. We call it a two-party system because we have 2 large parties and a number of small parties. And the large parties are so large that we often forget about the rest. Usually the small parties collectively poll less than 5% of the vote cast in national elections. The Democratic and Republican parties are the largest and most competitive organizations in the American community. They organize the electorate very simply by maintaining the two-party system. Americans almost inevitably become Democrats or Republicans because there is usually no other place for them to go. Moreover, because the rivalry of these parties is very old, most Americans know where they belong in the system. As a consequence of the dominance of the major parties, most elected officials are either Republicans or Democrats. Attempts to break up this old system have been made in every presidential election in the past 100 years. But the system has survived all assaults. How does it happen that the two-party system is so strongly rooted in American politics? The explanation is probably to be found in the way elections are conducted. In the United States, unlike countries with a parliamentary system of government, We elect not only the president, but a large number of other officials, about 800,000 of them. We also elect congressmen from single-member districts. For example, we elect 435 members of the House of Representatives from 435 districts. There are a few exceptions. One member for each district. Statistically, this kind of election favors the major parties. The system of elections makes it easy for the major parties to maintain their dominant position, because they are likely to win more than their share of the offices. One of the great consequences of the system is that it produces majorities automatically. Because there are only two competitors in the running, it is almost inevitable that one will receive a majority. Moreover, the system tends slightly to exaggerate the victory of the winning party. This is not always true, but the strong tendency to produce majorities is built into the system. In over 200 years of constitutional history, Americans have learned much about the way in which the system can be managed so as to make possible the peaceful transfer of power from one party to the other. At the level of presidential elections, the party in power has been overturned by the party out of power 19 times, almost once a decade. In the election of 1860, the political system broke down, and the Civil War, the worst disaster in American history, resulted. Our history justifies our confidence in the system, but also shows that it is not foolproof. The second major party is able to survive a defeat because the statistical tendency that exaggerates the victory of the winning party operates even more strongly in favor of the second party against the third, fourth, and fifth parties. As a result, the defeated major party is able to maintain a monopoly of the opposition. The advantage of the second party over the third is so great that it is the only party that is likely to be able to overturn the party in power. It is able, therefore, to attract the support of everyone seriously opposed to the party in power. The second party is important as long as it can monopolize the movement to overthrow the party in power, because it is certain to come into power sooner or later. Another consequence of the two-party system is that whereas minor parties are likely to identify themselves with special interests or special programs and thus take extreme positions, the major parties are so large that they tend to be moderate. Evidence of the moderation of the major parties is that much business is conducted across party lines. What happens when the Democrats control one House of Congress and the Republicans control the other? About the same volume of legislation is passed as when one party controls both houses, although some important legislation is likely to be blocked temporarily. It is possible to carry on the work of the government even when party control is divided, because party differences are not fundamental.